We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode. The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
One thing you mentioned, too, is just having a mixed income environment, which I believe is very beneficial. Some may not necessarily be too aware of that kind of structure because, you know, most often folks, their mind goes to like affordable, should be affordable for everyone making a certain income. However, there is a lot of value in a mixed income environment. So from your perspective, what would you say are some of the advantages for everyone in the community of having, you know, all of those units, but it's a mixed income and not necessarily one class of people financially, if that makes sense?
Yeah, you know, we were approached by one of our reps to make the project entirely affordable. And when you do the numbers, the cost of things today and the profit margins to do affordable don't mix. They don't make sense. And then in real estate has some very finite rules when it comes to natural assets and natural barriers. And what I mean by that is anything by water, transit, highly visible institutions, schools, parks, attractions, all lend to a market rate or luxury area. And then you have your natural barriers, which are cemeteries, train tracks, freeways, highways. Those tend to be your more troubled areas because you can't get enough commerce into that space. So it's a delicate balance of commercial and residential, in which we call mixed use. And to be able to make sure that it is profitable, you have to have a mix of income, you know, in there. So what we were talking about earlier is re-entering those of us who've become successful, who are in the six and seven figures. Sure, we can move to, you know, Beverly Hills or the Gold Coast or Bel Air, but it doesn't really support the culture that now doesn't really exist, but could exist for the elements of sustainability, right? And so private investment into a community come from, you know, go to parks and programs. So when you go into affluent neighborhoods and you see parks named after people, it's because they paid for it. The city didn't pay for it. The state didn't pay for it. The county didn't pay for it. The feds didn't pay for it. The people who live there, who are the affluent pillars of the community, are the ones who shape the community and the culture of the community. So if we lack that private investment, then we lack any ability to invest generationally into our children. And so it's really important to have a mixture of income, but you also have to make sure that in a project like this, you're giving amenities or you're allowing amenities to be available in the community that would then draw that multi-income crowd.
Love that. In terms of amenities, what are you thinking? What's the vision?
Hey, we're talking like pools, arcades, restaurants, sports bars, things that we do everywhere else but our own community. We put those things back into our community. We make sure that there's availability for whatever it is that you want to do. Woodlawn, we're right across the street from a major golf course. It's a South Shore golf course, which Tiger Woods was supposed to be redesigning. I don't think it's off the table, but it's been a little minute. But those are the types of things that I think, you know, our high earners within our community love to do is play golf, right? Have golf simulations. Really, really immerse our young people into AI and AR and VR, design, the entire STEM opportunities. Those are the things. Walkability is a key thing when you're looking at, you know, where do I want to live next? You know, what do I have at my disposal? Do I have to get in my car? Do I have to get into an Uber? Do I have to get on a train or a bus to get some of the basic things that I need? I think that is a part of the amenity process.
Definitely. And I love that because, you know, obviously anyone can come and live down there, but there was a time when we all lived together, mm-hmm. like all income ranges and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I believe this is a great opportunity to get back to that, right? Yeah. And make it a desirable place for everyone and to have all the things that everyone values. And I think the social benefit of it is folks get to interact with people who they probably otherwise wouldn't be able to interact with and learn from and share experiences with. So in my opinion, I believe that's an additional benefit and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. It's a colleague of mine says it's a black utopia.
And I like that,
you know, and I agree, and I don't want to be too pie in the sky,
yeah.
But these are not things that nobody else is experiencing. If you look at this at 30,000 feet, we are the only group of people who don't live together. You've got Chinatown, you've got Koreatown, you've got Little Italy, and you know, Greek town, you've mm-hmm. Ukrainian village. Right. It is very customary for those who identify with one another culturally and physically that we understand the needs and necessities for a higher level of sustainability, both socially and economically. And so I know that all of us, you know, are not on the same page. And so I always kind of question, you know, who do I think I am? Right. But I can't ask permission to do something that I believe that I've been called to do. I'm going to do it. And if you like it, that's wonderful. If you don't, you may eventually like it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those things that I struggled with early on was mm-hmm. knowing that we are divided and then saying, hey, here's some unification for you. You know, it doesn't always work that way.
Definitely. So you mentioned a calling and it's been great hearing you talk just through the whole process. And I could tell this is like your world right now. And when did you feel called? And was there something in your background? I know you have the legacy of your grandfather, your father. Were you in real estate prior, or was this kind of like a shift of the direction of your life and something that, you know, you're like, I need to do this?
You know, I am an artist. By nature, And so I'm a very creative individual and have always been, you know, that kid who said, hey, can you draw this for me? Or, you know, do this. So, yeah. So I've always been that kind of creative thinker. And then, you know, my mother has been in real estate. She'd been in real estate. She's retired now, but she had been in real estate for 30 years. And so I'd go to all the showings with her and get all of the, you know, vernacular and colloquials and understand. She kind of taught me the business side of it. Even tried to get me to go to real estate class, but I just bored to tears. I take my hat off to all agents and brokers because those tests are brutal. When I decided that I didn't want to work for anybody anymore, because I couldn't get into a career where people would allow me to be me. Right. They want to be able, you know, I think the world is very, very interesting where they want to tell you what to do, but then they also want to tailor your response to what makes them feel good.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm just not that person. Right. So as somebody who is highly creative and individualistic, I needed to find an outlet where I could use those gifts. And so I went to my dad. I said, hey, you know, I want to start my own business, you know. And he was like, okay, well, you got to start with a business plan. And so he was the one who taught me how to write up a business plan. I was 25. That was 2005. And by 2007, I'd opened my first business. I renovated a warehouse in Chicago on the south side in Bronzeville. So at 30,000 square feet, I lived on one side and then had events and a gallery. And the whole idea was to really build an artist commune where Black artists could go and another artist of color could go to get the same level of exposure that we weren't getting anywhere else.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.